Yes. What's that? I turned to the alchemist in headphones and realized he was talking to someone on the other end, not to us. A frown creased his features, and then he looked up at us. Someone wants to speak to you, Mrs. Ivashkov. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Sydney's father glare at the name.
Me?
Sydney asked, accepting the headphones handed over to her. She put them on and sat on the chair, joining a conversation we could only hear half of.
What do you mean?
I see. Are there any markings? Any objects? Okay. No, you could be right. Just wait, I'll come. Yes. She stood up and took the headphones off. What's going on? I asked.
That was Eddie, she said.
He was with the group about to raid the basement, but then at the last minute, he made them stop at the entrance.
Why?
Asked Zoe. Sydney met my eyes.
He said it smelled like Ms. Terwilliger's house.
For a minute, I thought she was suggesting Jackie was there, and then I caught on to the inference he'd made. You think there's some kind of magic use going on down there?
Alicia was the one who caught Jill for them, Sydney remarked.
It's possible she left some kind of trap in place. It would also explain why there were no warriors on guard down there.
Probably because they all ran up to fight in the initial assault, her dad said.
Alicia's words echoed back to me.
You'll never get to her. You'll never get through to her.
A feeling of dread settled into my stomach. No, there's something there.
They've suspended things until I can get out there to look, said Sydney.
Her eyes met mine.
You coming with me?
There was no need to ask, and we both knew it. A guardian drove us out to the site, which was outside of the city proper. No surprise there, as fanatics tended not to build their strongholds in civilized areas full of other people who might call the police. Desert terrain dominated, albeit in a different way from Palm Springs. The rocks and ground were a red that looked striking in the setting sun, with little patches of scrubby vegetation here and there. The compound itself was a wide, one-story building surrounded by barbed wire. Alchemists and guardians patrolled the area side by side, and I could see where they had rounded up and contained the enemy warriors. Dimitri met us as we got out of the car.
This way, he said, gesturing forward. We think there are still mines in the area. I'll take you on a path I know is safe.
We followed him over the rocky ground, into the enclosure, past the glaring prisoners. The building itself was as stark as a military barracks, and as far as I could tell, it had served no purpose except to hold prisoners and as a hangout to discuss crazed anti-vampire schemes. It chilled me seeing it all. A stairwell in the center of the building led downstairs to an underground level, and there we saw Eddie, Neil, and Rose waiting at the bottom. Sydney and I followed the stairs down and found ourselves standing in a long concrete corridor that stretched off into darkness. A few doors could be seen branching off, but I had no idea what was beyond them. Beside me, Sydney winced.
Reminds me of a primitive version of some of the re-education levels, she murmured, shuddering.
Thinking back to when I helped rescue her, I could understand what she meant. That facility had also contained vast halls with mysterious doors, though it had had a much more clinical feel to it. It had all been sterile and lit with stark fluorescent lighting. This, meanwhile, was more like a dirty, medieval dungeon in the wilds of Utah. It made me sick to think of Jill being inside.
We think Jill's just down there, said Rose. That's what the alchemist's equipment detected. I want to go in and get her, but Eddie...
It was clear she didn't share his fears. He looked a little embarrassed but held his ground.
I just can't shake the feeling something's off here. Why not have guards on their most valuable prisoner? And do you smell that?
Sydney nodded, and I had to agree.
It does smell like Jackie's house, I remarked. Someone's burned incense here, said Sydney. Though it's not something you'd see Ms. Terwilliger using very much. Vetiver. Black Lotus.
She frowned and scanned around.
There. There are some ashes down the hall. That's where it was burned.
I started to investigate, but she held me back.
Wait, she said.
She held up her hand and spoke words in a language I didn't know. After several seconds, glowing symbols appeared in the ceiling above where the ashes were. Sydney studied them intently until they faded away, and then she exhaled in dismay.
Damn.
I rarely heard her swear,
and didn't think that boded well.
"What is it?" I asked.
"There's a demon here," she replied in a tone that was far too casual for that kind of pronouncement. "It looks like Alicia summoned one to stand guard."
"Hopper's technically a demon," I offered.
Her face was grim. "Not that kind, I'm afraid. This is a Senecus." Seeing our blank looks, she asked, "Have you ever heard of a Hydra in Greek mythology? It's kind of like that. Kind of. Serpentine, lots of heads. But these heads spit boiling acid."
I'd taken Greek mythology in high school and actually paid attention to it.
"Do the heads grow back, too?" I asked.
"Not if you destroy them with fire," she said.
"Do we need a flamethrower?" asked Neil.
Sydney held out her palm, and a ball of flame appeared.
"No need."
Rose's eyes widened in wonder.
"Whoa! Will blades still hurt this thing?"
"No," said Sydney. "It has a magical hide that'll protect it. I'm the only one who can really take this thing out. What you guys need to do is get Jill out of here while I distract it. Someone needs to sneak past it while it's engaged. Fire's the only way to destroy this thing, and I don't want Jill trapped here if things literally go up in smoke."
Once again, I was feeling useless. Sydney might be a pro at wielding fireballs, but that didn't mean I wanted her taking on this Hydra demon thing alone.
"What should I do?"
"Nothing," she said. "Get out of here."
"She thinks you're incompetent," hissed Aunt Tatiana. "She thinks you'll be in the way."
"Sydney, let me help," I insisted. Sydney's eyes weren't even on me as she scrutinized the corridor, probably gauging the range of her fireballs and how flammable the whole thing was.
"Adrian, there's nothing you can do here. Stay safe in case Jill needs help when she gets out."
"Do you hear that?" asked Aunt Tatiana. "She doesn't think you're capable of anything."
My temper started to flare, and I nearly agreed with Aunt Tatiana until I took a moment to mentally replay what Sydney had said.
"No, she's right," I told the phantom in my head. "If Jill's injured, I need to conserve my power. No repeats of Olive."
Aunt Tatiana disagreed.
"You don't need to conserve. You can do it all."
Trying to shut out that internal voice, I kissed Sydney and drew her into a brief embrace.
"Be careful," I murmured. "And if you do need me, I'll be close by."
"Not too close," she warned. "This thing spits acid. I can't have you injured."
"Understood," I said, before Aunt Tatiana could raise a protest about how Sydney was coddling me. I took up a position on the staircase, allowing me a quick escape if need be, but also giving me a good vantage on the action about to take place. I hadn't argued with Sydney, but Jill's health wasn't the only thing I was concerned about. Along with Sydney, the Dompiers were putting themselves at risk. I wanted to be on hand in case any of them were injured in this escapade. After a heated argument, the three of them decided on a plan. Eddie and Neil would wait with me as backup, while Rose slipped into the corridor alone. Each of the guys wanted to go, but she pointed out that she was smaller and faster. She also argued that all of them plus Jill, trying to get back past the demon, would make for tight quarters. It was hard for the guys to fault her logic, and Sydney concurred that with fireballs flying, it'd be easier for her to have fewer people to worry about. So Eddie and Neil reluctantly came to wait by me, and Rose hovered just behind Sydney.
"Time to summon it," said Sydney nervously. "It'd come on its own if I crossed those runes, but I'd rather bring it out on my own terms." She held up her hands and spoke an incantation that once again made the markings in the ceiling glow. Only this time, a creature materialized below it. I understood then why a Hydra had been her closest comparison. From the waist down, the demon walked on two legs just like we did, albeit with scaly skin and talons in its feet. From the waist up, it had several sinuous tentacles extending from its torso, as well as five snake-like necks and heads. All of them were hissing and glaring at Sydney. I felt fear churn in my own stomach at the sight of it, and almost wished for the time when the only monsters I knew about in this world were Strigoi. Despite the terror that thing inspired, I still felt an overwhelmingly protective urge to help Sydney. It wouldn't matter if my own life was at risk. I'd gladly sacrifice it for hers.
"Do it! Do it!" exclaimed Aunt Tatiana. "Throw something at it!"
There's nothing to throw, I said, and Sydney's got this.
Hmm? Asked Eddie.
I'd spoken out loud again and shook my head. Nothing.
Sydney held her ground, staring down the snake demon in front of her, as though she did this every day and hadn't unexpectedly walked into one's lair now. A fireball came easily to her fingertips, and she hurled it without preamble at one of the serpentine heads. Her aim was good, except that the snake was just too fast. In the blink of an eye, it had swerved its head and dodged. One of the other heads spit a glob of bright green goo that landed on the concrete floor and began eating away at the surface. I didn't want to think about what that stuff would do to flesh. Sydney threw and missed again, but her gaze remained steely.
I'll get a hit in eventually, I heard her tell Rose, and that's when you make your move.
Rose was braced beside her, ready to pounce. The two of them made a striking combo, one dark and one golden, both utterly fearless in the face of this danger. They were beautiful in their deadliness.
Sydney's next fireball struck ahead. The creature reared back in pain, all of its surviving heads screaming. Rose used that as her chance, sprinting past the creature and keeping to the opposite side of the cement corridor. The demon still noticed her and started to turn, but a direct fireball hit drew its angry attention back to Sydney. Some of its tentacles were short and stubby, but a few were quite long and occasionally made dangerous grabs for her, meaning she had to dodge both those attacks and the acid. She managed it more deftly than I could have, evading the strikes with a skill Wolf would have applauded.
Too close, muttered Neil, after Sydney just barely sidestepped some acid.
She's got this, I said, and as though on cue, another fireball blasted into one of the snake heads, leaving a charred husk behind.
What's taking Rose so long? Demanded Eddie.
I didn't have an answer for that. She'd disappeared into the darkness, and none of us knew what was beyond that.
She could have 20 doors to look in, or maybe they were locked, or Jill could be tied up or in chains. None of us knew for sure, and that uncertainty was hard on the rest of us.
Sydney had just annihilated a third snake head when I heard Eddie give a sharp intake of breath. In the shadows beyond the creature, I could just make out Rose, with another figure leaning heavily on her for support. The other person's face was buried on Rose's shoulder, but there was no mistaking the tangle of long, light brown hair. My heart jumped to my throat. Jill. Rose was obviously waiting for an opening to get back through, and a shift in Sydney's stance told me she'd seen them behind the demon. She threw a fireball wide, one that wasn't specifically aimed at a head, but which forced the creature to rear toward the side of the corridor. Rose recognized her opportunity and hurried forward, half-dragging Jill along the way. A cluster of tentacles made contact with Rose's leg, and I stopped breathing. But then a rapid and well-placed fireball took out a fourth head. The creature let go and turned its wrath on Sydney, as Rose broke through and got Jill to the stairs. In a flash, Eddie and Neil were at her side, helping Rose bring her up. My stomach twisted as I took in the sight of Jill, and I had an unwelcome sense of deja vu back to the time when we'd finally found Sydney in the depths of the re-education center. Jill's condition was similar. She'd lost a considerable amount of weight, and her skin was pale, even by Maroi standards. She was in dirty, rumpled pajamas. What she'd been kidnapped in, no doubt, and it looked as though they hadn't really let her bathe, either. Her pupils were slightly dilated, which confirmed they'd given her some kind of drug that had interfered with me reaching her in dreams.
"Are you okay?" I asked.
I drew spirit into me, prepared to heal her.
No, don't do it, she warned.
Even drugged, the bond must still have been working. That, or she simply knew me well enough by now to guess what I'd do. It took her a few seconds to form the rest of her words.
I'm just weak. Hungry. They gave me animal blood.
My stomach turned at that. Maroi could survive on animal blood, but survive was about the kindest way you could put it. We'd stay alive but lose a lot of strength and energy. There were always stories that popped up once in a while about some Maroi family that got trapped without a feeder for a week or so and had to feed off animals. They'd emerge weak and debilitated, making for sensational headlines in Maroi news. I couldn't even imagine what shape Jill must be in after a month of that. It explained why she could barely stand. Still, the instinct was there to help her anyway, to give her a boost with spirit.
No,
she said sharply, again anticipating me. Just get me to a feeder, and get someone out to the back of this property. There's a shed there with another basement prison.
I'll take her to a feeder, said Eddie, starting to move her up the stairs. Rose helped by supporting Jill's other side.
I'll go find the other Maroi, said Neil, starting to move ahead of them.
He paused and glanced back at Sydney. Unless you need me.
I shook my head. I'll get her out of here. Go help the others.
The Dompiers and Jill disappeared, leaving me alone to look after Sydney. That snake demon was down to one head, but I noticed now that there was smoke in the corridor. One of her fireballs must have hit a door and found something to ignite.
We need to get out of here, I yelled to her. That fire might spread. Jill's safe.
I'm not leaving this guy to run rampant,
Sydney shouted back. A well-placed fireball nearly took out the remaining head, but the creature dodged at the last second, missing the hit by barely an inch. It roared in fury, and one of its tentacles shot out more quickly than Sydney could anticipate. It caught her by her feet, knocking her to the ground, and with equal speed, the demon hurried over, its last head rearing up in triumph as it prepared to drench her in acid.
Do something! Do something!
Aunt Tatiana screamed at me. But there was nothing to telekinetically throw, no plants to summon like Sonya might do. This was the waking world, not a dream. Spirit was not a combat magic, but in the space of a heartbeat, I still knew I had to act. Sydney, my heart, my love, and my wife, was seconds away from death. I would have gladly thrown my body in front of hers, but there was no time for that either. I had only a millisecond to decide, so I pulled out my last spirit trick.
Stop!
I ordered. Spirit burned through me, and I sent a wave of compulsion into the demon, attempting to bend its will to mine. I'd never done anything like that. I didn't even know if it could be done. The creature actually paused, however, making me think it had both sentience and the ability to be controlled. Emphasis on ability. Because even though the creature momentarily restrained itself, I could feel my hold slipping, and it snarled again, ready to strike Sydney. The more strong-willed a person was, the harder it was to compel them. Demons must be in an entirely different class, because I was already amped up on spirit and was just barely having an effect.
More! More! Said Aunt Tatiana.
I drew on greater reserves of spirit, pulling everything out of me, all my energy and life, all my resolve. It was more than I'd used in the dream with Olive, nearly as much as I'd used to bring back Jill. Spirit filled every part of me, making me greater than I'd ever thought I could be, nearly godlike. I turned that power on the demon, exerting my control as I issued my commands.
Let her go! Back up!
The demon obeyed. Its tentacles released Sydney, who scrambled away and got to her feet. Fire filled her palms, and with the demon in my thrall, it made an easy target for her to finish the last head. Once that one was destroyed, the rest of the creature's body disintegrated into a fine black dust. Spirit still burned brightly within me, though, making me feel exhilarated and unstoppable. Sydney hurried to my side and shook my arm.
Adrian, let it go, she said. It's done. You did it. Release the magic.
No one has ever possessed power like this, Aunt Tatiana told me. Can you feel it? Don't you feel alive? Why would you ever want to let this go?
She was right. With this kind of power, I could do great things. Strigoi, the warriors, even demons. None of our enemies stood a chance. We didn't need silver stakes or Sonya's vaccine. I could do it all. I would save our people single-handedly.
Adrian! Adrian!
For a moment, I didn't know whom the voice belonged to. I was too lost in my power. Power that was burning me up. A face moved into my smoky vision. A human, with blonde hair and brown eyes. But I didn't know her either.
Adrian!
She cried again.
Let it go, please! Release the magic. For me.
For me, she'd said. But who was she? Then, at last, the intoxication of spirit faded enough for me to know. Sydney. Sydney, my wife. She was the one looking into my face, looking so completely terrified.
Ignore her, said Aunt Tatiana. This is the magic you were born to wield!
Sydney squeezed my hand.
Adrian, please, release the magic. I could feel spirit starting to obscure my mind again, starting to blot Sydney out, starting to destroy all of my higher reasoning, just as it had Nina's. I wanted to let go, but it was hard when that power gave me such a heady, glorious feeling.
"You are a god," Aunt Tatiana told me. "I'm so proud of you."
"Adrian," said Sydney, "I love you."
Those words, that voice, had more power over me than any phantom ever could. And then, just before spirit could blot her away again, I let go of the magic.
Chapter 19. Sydney. I knew it when it happened. I saw it in his eyes, a sudden coming back to himself. At least I hoped he was coming back to himself. I had no idea what kind of power he'd used to command an otherworldly demon, but I knew what massive amounts of spirit did to those who wielded it.
"Sydney,"
he gasped out, sagging into me. I nearly wept in relief.
"Yes. Come on, let's go."
The door I'd accidentally hit was burning merrily now, and I didn't know how these lower rooms connected to the main floor. I didn't want to risk everything collapsing down around us. Adrian seemed a little addled, and I had to guide him to the stairs. A panicked part of me kept thinking back to what he'd told me about Nina, how spirit had left her incoherent. "He knew me," I told myself. "He knew me." As long as we had that, I had to believe everything would be okay. We made it upstairs, where a cluster of guardians anxiously waited at the stairwell's entrance. They'd been under strict orders not to interfere, but it was clear that went against their natures.
"Get everyone out of here," I said to the guardian closest to me. "There's a fire down there, and I don't know how far it's spread. And make sure there are no weapons left up here."
These were the warriors, after all. I didn't want a new disaster brought on because of explosives accidentally igniting. Adrian and I made it outside, and I guided him past the busy guardians and alchemists, as well as the warrior prisoners. Out near where we'd parked, I caught sight of some familiar faces and made them our destination. Rose, Dimitri, and Eddie stood by Jill, who was sitting in a folding chair next to another chair. That chair's occupant was starting to get up and be led away by a guardian, and I recognized the vacant expression of a feeder.
"Wait!" I called. "Adrian needs blood, too."
Jill leapt to her feet, still looking weary and bedraggled, but with much more life and color in her face than when I'd seen her in the basement. Despite everything she'd just been through, she hurried forward to help Adrian sit. I didn't know if he actually needed blood, but he'd just been through a big ordeal of his own, and blood usually had a curative effect on Maroi. He hadn't said a word to me since my name earlier, and I couldn't shake the panic that spirit might have finally claimed him for good. The feeder offered his neck, and Adrian automatically leaned over and bit down. I looked away, not sure I'd ever be entirely comfortable with this part of vampiric life.
"He's in there," said Jill, holding my hand, her green eyes looking even wider than usual with her face so gaunt. "He'll be okay."
I nodded and tried to hold back tears.
"You should be resting," I told her.
My heart was tied up with Adrian, but it hit me then just how much she'd endured. The fact that she could stand here and be concerned for someone else was a testament to her strength.
"Oh God, Jill, I can't even imagine what you must have gone through. I'm so sorry we couldn't get to you sooner. Did they hurt you?"
She shook her head and managed a weak smile, though I could see the anguish in her eyes.
"Most were too nervous to be around me that long. Alicia had some kind of time condition set on that spell, with that creature. There was a short period each day, around sunrise, when someone could come into my cell, drug me, leave food and blood, and then get out. They never stayed long. I think they were too afraid of being trapped in there with me."
"I'm so sorry," I said again.
"I wish we could have saved you sooner."
Jill hugged me.
"I know you were trying. I was able to see a lot through the bond, and..."
"Jailbait?"
The feeder was stepping away, and Adrian was looking in our direction, his expression alert and clear.
Jill cried out and ran into his arms, tears shining on her face. My own tears fell then, unable to stop themselves in the wake of this reunion. "You're okay," he breathed, cupping her face. "You're okay. I was so worried. You have no idea. I thought I'd failed you." Jill began to cry harder. "You've never failed me. Never." I wanted to throw myself in Adrian's arms as well, but waited so that they could have this moment. The love Adrian and I shared was powerful, and I knew it would sustain us for the rest of our lives, no matter what was to come. But the love he and Jill shared, this sibling-like affection born from spirit, was powerful too. I knew how it had eaten him up to be away from her. The sound of a car door caught my attention. I looked over to the other side of the makeshift parking lot just in time to see my father and Zoe getting out of a car, with Stanton. After a quick glance to ascertain Adrian and Jill were fine without me, I walked over to intercept the alchemists.
"Sydney," said Stanton by way of greeting. "It seems everything's worked out in this operation of yours. I presume you'll give me those other two names?"
"Charlene Hampton and Eugene Lee," I said promptly. Stanton repeated them to herself and immediately reached for her cell phone.
"Very good. I'll see to it they're looked into."
"What about the rest of our deal?" I demanded.
"Not much time has passed," she reminded me. "But I was able to get an intermediary decision. For you. The other alchemist leaders have agreed to leave you alone. You and your, husband may go off into the world and do whatever it is you plan on doing."
A small frown in her otherwise proper delivery was the only indication of how distasteful she found that prospect.
"You mean it?" I asked. "Adrian and I are free? No one spying on us or looking over our shoulder?"
My dad's jaw dropped.
"As free as anyone is in this world," she said ruefully. "Honestly, I think it was a relief to some of them. You're an awful lot of trouble, Sydney of Oshkov."
I couldn't help but smile. "And what about the others? The other detainees?"
"Amnesty for them as well. If you turn over the information," she added. "I can't make any guarantees about the future of re-education. That's a more complex issue."
It didn't seem that complex to me, but freedom for me and the others who'd suffered through re-education was a huge boon, if the alchemists held true to it.
"I meant what I said about my questions concerning the re-education issue," Stanton told me. "It is one I plan on pursuing. We do need to have disciplinary systems in place, like in the case of the tattoo emergence, but obviously there are lines we might be able to better redefine."
"Thank you, ma'am," I said. Again, I hoped I was right in my read of her, that she was telling the truth.
"I'll have the laptop's contents sent to you." "Excellent. Now excuse me a moment while I deal with Ms. Hampton and Mr. Lee."
She dialed a number on her cell phone and strolled away, leaving me in a slightly awkward situation with my dad and Zoe.
"I don't know what you've pulled over her," my dad growled. "But there's no way the alchemists are going to let you just get away with this abomination of a life. Some might think it's okay, but others won't."
"That's true," I said. "But Stanton clearly thinks it's okay, and I firmly believe people like her will make a strong enough argument to ease up on me and some of the others who no longer want to be part of the alchemists. In fact, you're going to help her make that case." Fury sparked in his eyes.
"Never!"
"Because here's the thing, Dad," I told him, continuing as though he hadn't spoken. "I got Stanton to help with this rescue by giving her four names of people who were working with the warriors to make more of those illicit tattoos. I gave her four, but I had five. And I think you know who the fifth was."
"I have no idea,"
he said immediately. Zoe gave him a shocked look.
"What? You didn't. You couldn't have.
The proof is there, I said. The laptop we recovered has records of meetings and orders you made with some of the warriors. Now, if you're lucky, the alchemists, who were already busted, won't turn you in to try to save themselves. And if you're cooperative, I won't turn you in either.
Cooperative, he scoffed. What does that mean to someone like you? Someone who's thrown away all the moral lessons you were raised with?
It means, I interrupted, that you're going to support Stanton in revising re-education and holding to this deal with me. And it also means you're going to restructure the custody arrangement so that Zoe gets to see Mom. My dad clenched his hands into fists.
You've no right to dictate any of this. I won't go along with this blackmail.
Fine, I said. Then I'll go tell Stanton there's one more person she needs brought in. And don't forget, even if they get rid of re-education, she did say they'd still need disciplinary measures in place for instances like this.
Dad, how could you? Exclaimed Zoe. You know how many people those tattoos hurt.
You don't understand, he said. It's the warriors who'd be getting them. It doesn't matter what happens to them.
I nodded with mock solemnity. I'm sure that hypocritical argument will hold up well with Stanton. The alchemists love gray areas. They certainly prefer that to black and white.
Sydney?
I heard Adrian call. I turned and gave him a quick wave before turning back to my dad and Zoe.
Those are my terms. Comply, and I'll make sure there's no mention of your name when I turn the info over to Stanton. And if not...
I left it hanging, letting my father's imagination do the work for him. As he stood there in shock, I gave Zoe a fast hug.
Good seeing you. Get a message to me if he doesn't let you see Mom, though I'll probably find out before then.
Leaving them, I went back over to where my friends were. Only Dimitri and Neil were missing. Adrian intercepted me, sweeping me into his arms.
Sydney, he breathed into my ear. I'm so sorry I lost it down there.
You didn't lose anything, I said fiercely, wrapping my arms around his neck. You held it together. You brought yourself back and did the right thing.
I didn't feel like I had it together,
he said softly, holding my gaze.
There was a minute there. I didn't know you. I didn't know anything except how the power felt. And Aunt Tatiana was there, screaming in my head. She's still there, even while I'm talking to you. I think...
He took a deep breath.
I think I'm definitely ready to go back on my meds. I don't know what'll happen if a time comes when I need spirit and can't use it. But there's no way I can risk losing myself like I almost did today. I can't be like Nina, like Avery.
I buried my face into his chest. You won't be. You already have proven you aren't. You stepped back when they couldn't. And whatever happens, you won't have to face it alone. I'll help you.
Tears came to my eyes again. And this time, they were tears of happiness.
I think we did it. I think we might be free of the alchemists. I've been wheeling and dealing and, well, I don't know if it'll work, but it looks like it might, and...
I started laughing, realizing I was babbling.
I don't know what's coming next, but I do know we'll be together.
Adrian caught my left hand with his, letting our wedding rings shine together in a glittering display of rubies and diamonds.
That's all that matters, Sage of Oshkov. Well, that and me having to put the smackdown on Castile if he doesn't finally get his act together with Jill.
I turned to where Eddie was sitting with Jill, holding her hand and speaking earnestly. I laughed again.
I think you'd lose in a smackdown with him. No offense.
But, fortunately, I think he's finally coming around. I watched Eddie and Jill a few more moments, unable to hear what they were saying. From her shining face... It was good news. She touched his unshaven face and smiled, apparently liking the scruffiness Adrian always teased him about. Leaning into Adrian, I sighed happily, feeling at peace with the world for the first time in a very long time. We sat there,
holding each other for several peaceful minutes until we saw Dimitri approaching. "Any news?" I asked, lifting my head.
"Take that feeder,"
Dimitri told another guardian walking behind him. The man hurried to obey.
"We found more Maroi."
"The other's being held," said Jill. She glanced between Rose and Eddie. "I told you guys about them. Are they okay?"
"Yes,"
said Dimitri.
"Malnourished, like you, but they'll be all right. Neil played a huge role in rescuing them. They were in a very difficult, almost cavern-like prison that required a fair amount of climbing."
"Neil's a good guy like that," Adrian said. "Where is he?"
Dimitri looked perplexed.
"I actually thought he was coming back here."
He touched his earpiece.
"Does anyone have a visual on Neil Raymond?"
We all watched in silence as Dimitri waited for a response. At last, he shook his head.
"No one's seen him."
Adrian and I exchanged glances, the same thought hitting us.
"Get everyone looking for him," Adrian said.
"Now! If you don't find him right away, I have a feeling you won't ever."
Dimitri looked astonished by that declaration, but nonetheless ordered a camp-wide search for Neil. Eddie looked both concerned and confused.
"Do you think he's hurt? Or captured?"
I shook my head. "I think he saw an opportunity, and we have to stop him." But we were too late, and after an hour, nothing came back from Dimitri's searches. Neil had performed his heroics and then disappeared.
"He knew," Adrian said. "He knew that as soon as this was over, I was going to start a hard sell on Declan. This is my fault."
"What are you talking about?" asked Rose. She could tell something was afoot and had been waiting not so patiently during the search. "Is Declan okay?"
"He's fine,"
Adrian said. But again, we exchanged looks, neither of us able to give voice to our fears. If we'd lost Neil, what was going to happen to Declan? Adrian shook his head.
"I'll find Neil in a dream."
"Adrian," I warned. "You just said..."
I know,
he said with a groan. "But we have to find Neil. You know why." Here it was, spirit threatening us again.
"Even if you find him in the dream world, that's no guarantee he'll come back to us in the waking one,"
I reminded Adrian.
"Will someone please tell me what's going on?"
asked Eddie.
"Why wouldn't Neil come back?"
I laced my fingers with Adrian's. "Let's just get back to Declan. Then we'll figure out what to do about Neil." Even though they didn't know the whole story, Rose, Dimitri, and Eddie wanted to go back to Clarence's with Adrian and me in the hopes of tracking down Neil. Jill wanted to as well, but she was taken away to court, both to be under Alyssa's protection and to receive further medical treatment. I could tell it was agonizing for Eddie to part with her, but Neil was his friend, and they'd saved each other's lives more than once. I pretended not to see as Eddie kissed Jill goodbye and promised to see her soon. Back at Clarence's, we found things as we'd left them. Clarence was resting in his room, and Daniela was in the living room, going on about how Declan needed pajamas made of organic cotton rather than God knows what kind of cotton. She told us, much to our complete astonishment, that Neil had been by.
"What?"
exclaimed Adrian.
"Just this morning," she said. "Came by and held the baby for a while. Didn't say much. Then he was on his way. I thought you knew."
I had picked up Declan and was cradling him in my arms, surprised that I'd missed his warmth and, for lack of a better term, baby scent. Adrian stood by me and shared my surprise.
"We had no idea," he said.
"He left this,"
Daniela added. She handed over a sealed envelope that Adrian tore into immediately. Inside was a handwritten letter that Adrian opened so that we both could read it. "Adrian and Sydney, I know each of you have your own ways of figuring out where I am. If that's the course of action you choose to take, nothing I do can stop you. But I'm begging you,
Please don't. Please let me stay away. Let the Guardians think I've gone AWOL. Let me wander the world, helping those I can. I know you think I should stay with Declan. Believe me, I wish I could. I wish more than anything that I could stay and raise Olive's son, my son, and give him all the things he needs. But I can't shake the feeling that we'd never be safe. Someday, someone might start asking about Olive and her son. Someone might connect the baby I'm raising to him, and then her fears would be realized. News of his conception would change our world. It would excite some people and scare others. Most of all, it'd make Olive's predictions come true. People wanting to study him like a lab rat. And that's why I'm proposing that no one finds out he's my son or Olive's. From now on, let him be yours. No one would question you two raising a Dampier. After all, your own children will be Dampiers, and from what I've seen, you two are smart enough to find a way to convince others he's your biological child. I've also seen the way you two love each other, the way you support each other. Even with as challenging as your relationship has been, you've held true to yourselves and each other. That's what Declan needs. That's the kind of home Olive wanted for him. The kind I want for him. I know it won't be easy, and walking away from this is one of the hardest things I've had to do. If a day comes when I can feel convinced that it's safe beyond a doubt for me to be in his life, then I will. You can use one of those magical methods of yours to find me, and I swear I'll be there at his side in an instant. But until then, so long as the shadow of others' fear and scrutiny hangs over him, I beg you to take him and give him the beautiful life I know you can give him. Best, Neil. Adrian's hands were shaking as he finished reading the letter. Tears had formed in my eyes, and I was forced to blink them back. He's right, I finally said. We can find him with my magic. You don't even need to use spirit. Adrian folded up the letter and took Declan from me.
But he's also right about the risks.
What he's asking is big, I began. Neil was right that no one would question us having a Dampier child, but that didn't mean the complications weren't endless. Our own lives were already uncertain. I sank down on the couch, still holding Declan, my mind reeling. When Adrian had first proposed to me, I'd been nervous. Not for lack of love, but because being a 19-year-old bride had never been in my plans. And being a 19-year-old mother, that was definitely not in my plans. But then, was anything turning out the way I'd expected? I studied Declan's face, loving all the little perfect details, but also fully aware that if I committed to him, any attempts at salvaging the future I'd wanted, a home with Adrian, college, normality, were going to be seriously thwarted. And yet, how could I abandon Declan? I looked up at Adrian. I don't know what to do. I don't have the answer. I realized those weren't words I uttered very often. Adrian took a deep breath and glanced at those around us.
I think maybe we need to ask for some help with this.
I understood the suggestion and considered it. The fewer people who knew the truth about Declan, the better. But what was being asked of us was too big for us to shoulder alone. We needed allies we could trust in deciding Declan's future. And glancing around at those gathered, Rose, Dimitri, Eddie, and Daniela, I realized these were the people we could count on. Okay, I told Adrian.
Can somebody finally tell us what's going on? Rose cut in impatiently.
Adrian took a deep breath, bracing himself for the monumental story he was about to tell. Everyone else had gone very still and very silent, as though sensing the gravity of what was to come.
What I'm about to say is going to change everything you think,
Adrian said. He focused on Rose and Dimitri.
You two in particular are about to get your worlds rocked.
Epilogue. Adrian.
Is that them? My mother called. I thought I heard the door.
It'd better be, I said, taking a pan out of the oven and carefully setting it on the counter. This roast is at peak deliciousness. I'm not waiting for them to dive in. It would be a crime, a declaration of war against fine cuisine everywhere. My mother, used to my theatrics, smiled.
Sydney's not here yet either.
Oh, I said. Well, I'll wait for her. Eddie stuck his head in the kitchen, his face alight. They're here. I took off my oven mitts and apron and strolled out to the living room to see the guests who'd just come into the living room of our small rented house. I hadn't seen Rose and Dimitri in almost a year and a half, right around the time Jill had been rescued from the warriors in St. George. They looked the same as ever, gorgeous and formidable, as they stamped snow off their boots and gave us big smiles. Jill, who'd traveled with them, had already thrown herself into Eddie's arms and was kissing him.
"Whoa, hey," I said. "It hasn't been that long since you saw each other. Control yourselves."
It had actually been about a month since they'd been together, which I knew probably felt like an eternity to them. They'd been dating ever since her rescue from St. George, but she had had to go back to court to finish her education while Eddie stayed with us. So their relationship had become a long-distance one over the last year, with her visiting us on breaks or him going to court when he could get another guardian to stay with us. Jill flushed pink and extracted herself from Eddie long enough to give me a hug.
"I've missed you so much," she said.
"I've missed you too," I told her warmly. Every time I saw her, I was astonished to see how much she had transformed from an awkward girl into a poised princess of the Dragomir line.
"But you've got to admit, I've been pretty good about updates, and I send you pictures every week."
She grinned.
"I know, I know. It's just a little different not being with you like I used to."
I planted a kiss on her forehead. "Better for both of us that way, Jailbait." I'd held good on my word to Sydney. I'd gone back on my meds, silencing both Spirit and Aunt Tatiana. It had also quieted the bond between Jill and me. She still had a sense of me, but no longer the intimate view into my heart and mind like she'd once had. Before I could say more to her, a plaintive wail made its way to us.
"The little master awakes," I said. "Be right back."
I sprinted out of the room and up the stairs to the bedroom that doubled as both a nursery and Eddie's room. I had high enough royal rank to finally be assigned my own guardian, and Eddie, in that noble way of his, had pulled strings to be assigned to us. I'd initially protested because I wanted him to stay at court and have a semi-normal dating life with Jill. Eddie, however, felt obligated to be with us, both out of friendship to Sydney and me, and for all the times Neil had helped him. We'd offered to turn the house's small study into Eddie's own bedroom, but he always ended up sleeping in Declan's room anyway.
"Hey, buddy," I said, walking over to the crib.
Declan stood there in fire truck pajamas, watching me seriously with big brown eyes. His dark curls were tousled from sleep, but he beamed as I approached and lifted him out.
"Did you have a good nap? We have guests, you know. Aunt Jill is back."
Declan leaned his head against me and yawned, not responding. He was only a year and a half and not much of a conversationalist. Only a few of us knew his true age, however. To the rest of the world, we said he was just over a year old. That was because we were also telling the rest of the world that he was my and Sydney's son. Neil had been convinced it was the only way to give Declan a chance at an ordinary life, and we'd finally respected Neil's wishes to stay in hiding. There was no other family to care for Declan. Nina had never recovered. Even if we'd passed Declan off as Olive's son, whom we were raising on her behalf, there might still be too many questions about his father. But if we, a Moroi and a human, said we had a Dampier son, there was no reason for anyone to think we weren't telling the truth. And so Sydney and I had dropped out of contact with everyone for a while, finally telling the world we had a baby a few months after his supposed birthday. We claimed she'd gotten pregnant right after being rescued from re-education, and then we'd said he came early. We stayed away from people enough that we were able to fudge the dates and make it all seem plausible. If we seemed secretive in our actions, most people assumed it was because we were still nervous about the alchemists. They'd held good on their word to leave us alone so far, but everyone understood why we might be wary. It had also helped that we'd had excellent allies.
There was no way Sydney and I could have pulled all this off without our friends. Rose and Dimitri had helped cover for us back at court. My mom had been huge in helping watch Declan so that Sydney and I could still pursue other interests. Eddie had also helped take care of him, along with offering us much-needed protection. He was also the only one of us who'd finally gotten in touch with Neil in whatever undisclosed location he was at. Neil still kept his distance, but had recently allowed Eddie to send updates and pictures, and our hope was that someday Neil and Declan could be back in each other's lives.
"Look at him," squealed Jill when I came down the stairs. "He's gotten so big!"
Even Rose and Dimitri got in on the baby admiration. Whereas we'd seen Jill recently, it had been months and months since their last visit. Declan was probably a giant to them.
"We should have brought him a silver steak," Dimitri said. "I'm surprised Eddie hasn't taught him already."
Eddie, his arm resting on Jill, smiled.
"We work on it right after morning nap."
The living room door opened again, and Sydney stepped through, snowflakes in her blonde hair, a backpack over one shoulder, and a paper bag in her arms. I quickly handed Declan to Jill and took the bags from Sydney. Inside the paper one, I saw French bread and some fruit. The backpack felt like it had 100 books in it, which was probably true. She smiled up at me as she took her heavy coat off.
"Sorry I'm late," she said. "The roads were bad."
Underneath the coat, she wore a red wool dress and a name tag reading, "Sydney Ivashkov, student docent."
"Exciting times at the museum?" I asked.
"Always," she said, giving me a brief kiss on the lips.
"Better be careful in that dress," I said. "Someone might mistake you for a work of art."
After we'd moved here last year, Sydney had been ready to throw herself into the job market to support us, and that's when we'd had our first real fight that didn't involve something supernatural. I'd been insistent she finally go to college. She'd said it could wait until our finances built up. Fortunately, another good friend had come through for us. Clarence. With his ample fortune, he'd been more than happy to send us regular stipends. In fact, we'd had to limit him so as not to attract too much attention. But between those payments and student loans, Sydney had finally achieved her dream of studying ancient art at a local university. She'd even nabbed an internship at their museum. Recently, I'd also been able to help our family income with my own job. Sometimes that seemed like the most surreal part of all. Me, Adrian Ivashkov, earning an ordinary living. After all the bizarre ups and downs I'd had with money, going from a spoiled kid with unlimited funds to a guy cut off by his father, it seemed unreal sometimes that I now got by with an hourly wage like everyone else. Equally astonishing was how much I'd grown to like it. I'd honestly never expected to get a job with my art degree, if I even finished it. There just weren't that many jobs demanding artists, and certainly not ones that needed people with incomplete art degrees. While helping out a neighbor one day, though, I'd learned her daughter's preschool was looking for a part-time art teacher. At that level, my degree didn't matter so much, just my enthusiasm for teaching art to kids. Incredibly, I'd turned out to be pretty good at it. Though maybe it was just my natural-born immaturity that allowed me to relate to kids. I'd found a few other preschools and pitched myself to them, too, eventually gathering enough part-time positions to contribute substantially to our family's income. The original place liked me so much that the director had told me if I finished a bachelor's degree in education, I could come work a full-time teacher's position with better pay and solid hours. Sydney hadn't pressured me to go back to college, but when she'd heard that, her eyes had lit up, and I had a feeling she'd be working my college tuition into her master budget. I'd never seen this budget plan, but it apparently accounted for a lot of things. So far, it managed to support the five of us in the rented house and had a timeline in place for when we'd be able to afford a house of our own, more education for her and me, and eventually Declan's education. It was pretty impressive that she could make all of this work, but then I'd learned to expect impressive things from her. She hugged all our guests and then took Declan from Jill. Pretending he was our Dompierre son might have started off as an act, but it had become reality as far as we were concerned. Sydney loved the little guy fiercely, and, like the rest of us, would do anything for him. She kissed the top of his curly head and was rewarded with a smile.
"¿Cómo estás, mi amor?"
she asked, carrying him off to the kitchen to check dinner. Rose turned to me.
"Did she just speak to him in Spanish?"
"Yeah," I said. "She only speaks to him in Spanish, actually. It was in some parenting book she read about kids learning a second language. "We should eat," my mother said, shooting me a wry look. "Otherwise a crime against fine cuisine might be committed." That was another thing I'd taken upon myself, along with my collection of jobs. Cooking. And it turned out I wasn't so bad at that either. Later, when dinner had wound down and we were all around the table, I found myself gazing around, and unable to believe this was how my life had turned out. Never would I have guessed I'd fall so comfortably into the role of husband and father. Never would I have guessed I'd be married to a human. And I certainly wouldn't have guessed I'd be so happy without Spirit. After we'd rescued Jill and agreed to raise Declan, we'd had to make a very quick decision about where to run off to with our newly bought freedom. Northern Maine had won out. Close to civilization, but far enough that it wasn't so easy for someone to sneak up on us. I still woke conflicted sometimes, feeling guilty for loving Declan so much, being so glad I was able to call him my son. And always, always, I felt guilty for not saving Olive, for not having rationed my Spirit that night. But the past was gone, and all I could do now was honor Olive's wishes and give Declan as normal a life as possible. So far, we seemed to be pulling that off. He had no idea there was anything different about himself. Only a handful of people knew he wasn't actually my son. Even fewer than that knew the truth of his remarkable parentage. Everyone here at this Christmas gathering was in that elite group. All knew about Declan's past, and all were committed to protecting his future. Thinking about that, my gaze rested on Rose and Dimitri, sitting together at one end of the table. We'd told them about Declan because the odds were good they too were in the same situation as Olive and Neil. Both Dimitri and Olive had been restored from being Strigoi, and whatever feat of spirit had allowed Olive to conceive with another Dampier would likely apply to Rose and Dimitri also. Unlike us, however, they weren't going to be able to go off and cover up the miracle. Their lives were too visible. If they had a child together, everyone would know, and the revelation would come to light. Both of them knew this, but what their future plans were, I still didn't know. Well, I soon learned one plan of theirs. "Holy crap!" I said. While staring off at Rose and Dimitri, a brilliant flash had caught my eye. A flash on Rose's finger. "What's that?" I exclaimed. "Did you rob Lys's crown jewels?" Rose, in what was a rare look for her, actually appeared flustered. "Maybe it's too much." Dimitri brought her hand up to his lips and kissed the top of it. "No, it's perfect." Jill clapped her hands in delight. "An engagement ring!" "Hold up," I ordered. "Show the goods." With Dimitri grinning, Rose complied, holding out her left hand for the rest of the table to see. It was a remarkable piece of work. A large, perfectly cut round diamond was set into a lacy square of platinum filigree that was edged in tiny blue opals. It was a statement ring if ever there was one, and a wholly unexpected choice. "Did you pick that out?" I asked Dimitri. Honestly, I would have expected him to bend a piece of steel with his bare hands and present her with that. "He did," said Rose, her normal good humor returning. "He kept telling me that once I turned 20, it was just a matter of time before he proposed. I told him if he did, he better make it a rock star ring. Nothing subtle." "That's pretty rock star," said Eddie. "How long ago did this happen?" "About a month," said Dimitri. "I got her to wear it, but can't get her to set a date." She grinned. "All in good time, comrade. Maybe when I'm 30. There's no hurry. Besides, surely Christian's going to propose to Lys one of these days. We don't want to overshadow them." Dimitri shook his head in exasperation, but he kept smiling. "You've always got an excuse, Rosa. One of these days." "One of these days," she agreed. We stayed up late catching up with everyone, and then finally dispersed for bed. Rose and Dimitri were camped out in the living room, and Jill had made the study her bedroom, just as she always did when she visited. Declan had passed out a while ago, and once I made sure he was resting comfortably in his crib, I made my way to my own bedroom. This house we'd been renting was an old Victorian, and our bedroom was in the turret, which was off to the house's side and practically its own wing. I loved the room's round shape and privacy. It made me feel like we were in our own castle. Seeing as Jill had taken over Sydney's usual studying place, I wasn't surprised to find Sydney on our bed surrounded by books now, wearing a short robe. "You changed," I said,